Benjamin Franklin once said, "The bitterness of poor quality remains long after the sweetness of low prices forgotten." The fact is, quality matters. Join us as we make quality fun, interesting, and accessible to companies of all levels. Quality Matters is a must-listen for all things quality. Listen in, ask questions, and get back to doing what matters most. Quality Matters, brought to you by Texas Quality Assurance, where quality management gets simplified.
Well, hello and welcome back to the Quality Matters podcast. I am Kyle Chambers from Texas Quality Assurance, and joining us again today, we've got Caleb Adcock, right-hand man, software manager, and really, again, kind of the brains behind all the cool, fun stuff coming up from TQA Cloud, which, shameless ad, if you haven't checked it out yet, my gosh, y'all got to check out some of the cool stuff. I called the latest edition he made, I called it Quality Manager Porn, so you got to check it out. It's, promise, totally safe for work, but quality managers might get a little excited.
Quality work.
Oh, hey. So tell me about the topic you got for today. But before we dive in it, I got a little sidebar I want to go off on.
All right. So new developments from the last podcast. we covered the Boeing instance. Started talking about some of the Boeing planes that have been having issues. Guys, the door fell off, stuff like that. Well, what was it? 2 days after we did that episode, that's when all the news started popping up. About one of the whistleblowers apparently found dead in a parking lot, in an apparent suicide. There was a note. Of course, his lawyers are saying we have no reason to believe that he was, going to commit suicide. The guy was talking about living a long life, and he had just gotten done with depositions with lawyers in the whistleblower case. I guess he was in a retaliation case or something like that.
Oh my gosh.
I guess he worked at the company for 37 years, was raising awareness or, bringing to light the fact that some of their oxygen sensors weren't up to par. I think another thing that he was saying was that their floor panels were causing metal shavings that would corrode wiring in the floor and stuff. So, he had all kinds of issues that he was blowing the whistle on. And then I think the lawsuit that he was a part of was in it was a retaliation lawsuit. So.
Jeez.
New developments. So, yeah.
I'll be clear here. Cover ourselves. We don't know if any of the claims of this guy are true or not true. So, we can't attest to any of that. We're just having a good little conversation here. But I think it does bring up some kind of good points about stuff. And unfortunately, this is kind of a crazy, crazy example.
Yeah. And me and Kyle both just decided, hey, let's continue on a little bit, maybe pivot to something else. But and I think just last night there's video of one of their engines failing and them having to return back. It's just nonstop. Jeez. And I don't know if it's one of those things where it's like, oh, the spotlight's on the issue now, so we're seeing more and more stuff. But I really think that they're having quite a few issues, and the internet, of course, is going crazy.
Oh,
with
gosh, yeah. So, well, I guess we're now part of that going crazy, but I'd like to think we're gonna tackle this fairly level-headed. And
but I saw a post that said I'm creating my own Boeing plane from all the parts falling off.
Now that is funny. Oh man, okay,
gonna have our own airplane soon, so
we'll dive into all that. But I just got to vent for a moment, because as we're getting ready for this, which y'all have to know, I'm having a few technical issues still. Whatever. And so as I'm trying to figure those out, I get a text from my son, because it's spring break this week. And so all y'all know that we got horses since we moved out to the country. And my horse, Rhino, he is just a big, dumb oaf, right? Anyone can ride him. That's what we keep him for. He's just a nice guy, but he is a pain in the butt. And so Reese, he has to wear, here, let me see if I can share the screen here. Give me a second here. Let me see if I can present. Share. Window. Yeah. Okay. Share that. So this now, all right, maybe not the best picture, but this is a picture from a couple of weeks ago. Now you might notice, see, he's got this collar he has to wear. So that's what they call a crib collar. They call it cribbing, but what horses will do is they'll bite on a wood post. This guy will bite on a metal fence. He don't care. Or a metal pipe, and they'll latch their front teeth on it and stretch way back. And when they do and they breathe in, it kind of like gets them high because they get like this super rush of oxygen going across all their sinus tissues, basically. And so horses will do it. That this guy was a rescue horse. So he spent like years, like literally standing ankle deep in his own poo and like, you know, had a bad life. So this was like the only way the guy could entertain himself. Well, in any case, we had to put the collar back on him. And he doesn't like to keep the collar on, so he always fights the collar whenever we put it on him. But whoops, sorry, I killed you, Caleb. Yeah, you're back. And so you probably saw like I had like the denim around it, and that's that denim, by the way. Oh, I should have clarified that. The denim right here is supposed to be on the top, and this piece right here is supposed to be on the bottom. Because it'll cause him a little bit of pain when he has to open his mouth that wide and he can't stretch back. So he figured out how he could rotate the collar around. So we thought, we'll get smart and we'll attach it a little bit differently. And he couldn't rotate it around no more. Good stuff. Because we don't want him cribbing. It's bad for him. It's bad for his teeth. It's bad for his health. It's bad for my fence. And cribbing's good for, except to make him happy. Well, the dumb horse figured out how to pull the collar off. And so this the third time, it buckles on pretty darn good. This horse has figured out how to pull his collar off. We ain't figured out how he does it yet, but he, like I say, he's just kind of a bit of a pain in the butt. And so this is another real recent one. And I kind of say this, it's like, look, this is just life. We all deal with life. And so it's funny, we all deal with serious stuff all the time, but this is from a few days ago. Dude broke into the barn.
Not the feed barn?
Huh?
Is that the feed barn?
They ate a couple of bags. You can see the bags of feed down there at his feet. So those were all stacked up nice and neat on the left side of the barn. Big old stacks, 10 bags high. Yeah, he drug them all out, crapped all in the barn. It took like 2 hours to literally crap out.
And well, they look happy.
He's all matted up. He's just sweating and being stupid all day. But yeah, we love our horses.
They look very happy there. Ass.
Yeah. Oh, he was, man. He had a full tummy. He had a real full tummy. And his partner in crime there, that's my daughter's horse. And Cutter, I swear he can get fat off of air. But this was the first day that we've known him to refuse food because I think he'd eaten like 30 pounds of feed and had a tummy ache.
Oh, jeez.
That's what, literally, as we're getting ready for this podcast, my boy's texting me, did you take Rhino's collar off? No.
So maybe Rhino's not as dumb as you thought?
Oh, gosh. You know what I think it is? Because my boy's horse, Rabbit, she's due any day. So we got her bred last year, and like we're taking bets on which day she's going to give birth. But I think she might really be the brains of the operation because we couldn't figure out how they opened up that door. But Jesse came to me, my oldest boy, he came to me a couple days ago. He's like, Dad, do you know why there's like red on Rabbit's hoof? It doesn't look like blood, but that's weird that she's got red on her front hooves. And it sure enough matches marks on the door of the barn. So I think Rabbit has figured out how to kick in the barn door. And it would not surprise me one bit if she's not biting onto the collar and pulling it down to unbuckle it.
All right.
So I'm doing my own little investigation over here, some other crap. But in any case, back to the more serious topic. Why don't you just, you want to start off with that video?
Yeah, we can play this video here. I think it goes into a little bit. This is the guy that was found dead in the car. Like I said, apparent suicide.
No judgment on this guy, but like I have worked in shops before where you do get that one guy that finds fault with every freaking thing, right?
Yeah.
And they want things to be done to such an insane degree that's just not reasonable, not possible. So I don't know if this guy's like that or not, but to wind up dead after that, that's a little weird.
Yeah, here's the...
he had some real issues or he had some other issues.
All right. Whoa.
But he didn't sound crazy in the video, I'll say that.
What's that?
I said he doesn't sound crazy in the video. He just sounds ticked off.
Yeah, here's that video.
Let me see if I can add it in.
With pushing back defects to our suppliers.
What's that, Kyle?
Restart it. Took me a second there. Sorry to get it added to the screen.
Oh, okay.
You could hear it, but no one else could.
Ah.
Group of inspectors. One, this is not a 737 problem. It's a Boeing problem. When I first started working at Charleston, I was in charge with pushing back defects to our suppliers. I take a group of inspectors and actually go to the supplier and inspect their product before they send it in. Well, I'd taken a team of four inspectors to Spirit AeroSystems to inspect the 41 section before they sent it to Charleston. And we found 300 defects. Some of them were significant that needed engineering intervention. When I returned to Charleston, my senior manager told me that we had found too many defects and he was going to take the next trip. So the next trip he went on, he took two of my inspectors. And when they got back, they were given accolades for only finding 50 defects. So I pulled that inspector aside and I said, did Spirit really clean up their act that quick? That don't sound right. And she was mad. She said, no. Said the two inspectors were given 2 hours to inspect the whole 41 section and they were kicked off the airplane.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, that doesn't actually sound terribly unreasonable for number of shops I've been in. Now, again, everyone thinks like, oh, this is, aviation. So everything's going to be like absolute top notch, but not always. Well, in a lot of shops, high tech shops. Let me tell you, it's average Joe's working most of the time.
Yeah. And I mean, I also, there was an Al Jazeera video. I forgot about this one, where apparently a guy had been embedded in the Boeing plant for, I don't know, a long time, long enough to like get to know each other and actually have a job there. And he was doing recordings where he was talking. I think it was like 10 out of the 15 people that worked there, so they wouldn't ride on the new plane. I think it was this, I don't remember which model it was. It was one of their newer ones, the Dreamliner. I don't even think it's out yet, but it's the one they're designing and building right now. So yeah, you got 10 of the 15 people that worked there that were asked that they wouldn't even go on the planes. But
yeah.
So
he was basically, what he was describing here was a, it sounds like probably a supplier witness inspection. I mean, it's nothing uncommon in most industries. I mean, Caleb, I'm sure you've been on the receiving and giving end of those several times over. I know I have.
Yeah.
And it's just common. It's like you got parts that are to go out and the customer's like, we're going to have our people look at them and check them before it goes. And they come out on your site. They check the parts. Usually it's not a big deal, but it's a common, so freaking common practice.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we would have certain projects where the inspector for the company, that we were the supplier for, would be there the whole time, you know, throughout the whole project. That was part of their requirements was, they would have to have an inspector on all site and they were the final say in the inspection. And, you know, as long as it was agreed upon in the contract and that kind of thing, it's not like they were could make up their own rules by any means. But, you know, we knew that they were the direct link to the customer. So,
yeah. Yeah. And if, you know, look, there's channels protocol to go through for that type of stuff. Cause I mean, sometimes again, you get the inspector that's just maybe a little too gung ho on things, but that's where requirements and documentation are key. And you're like, we hear what you said. This is what's important. And if they want to reject or some others and they can, that's where you get management involved. But I don't know. Have you run into instances where you're doing the inspections and just get tons of pushback or maybe told by management to sweep under the rug?
Usually in that scenario, what ends up happening is as an inspector, you know, you're supposed to, and I think we've touched on this before, it's like, it's not your call. It's your responsibility to point out a defect. You're not supposed to be the one that's like making the call on whether or not it's okay to still use it. Like that's an engineer's call, or that's, I guess, management call. If the customer agrees to that, you know, it's ultimately up to the customer, but it's up to the inspector to find the problems, to document the problems and to point them out. And you know, like the guy mentioned in the video, he's like a few of those were significant enough to have engineer intervention, which means that those problems they were finding were so uncommon or so bad that there was not a common fix for them. You know, normally like if you have a weld defects or something like that, usually there's a documented procedure to repairing the defect. Mm-hmm. Well, if it's a terrible defect, then oh crap, you know, we got to go have the engineer a fix. You know, that's good enough to pass the engineer standards. But my point is that you shouldn't be getting pushback. If you do get pushback, you like, well, you know, I'm not going to say it's good. It's a defect. So somebody else needs to sign off on that.
Well, you know, we were talking before in the last episode, so this kind of matches with what our guesstimate was. I mean, we were saying before that, look, we can see a scenario where this type of stuff could happen and these issues could get away. And this guy's kind of describing that scenario of like, look, either the inspector or one of the managers or engineers said, not an issue, ignore it.
Yeah.
And kind of what this guy described. And I mean, it's like I say, it's unfortunately not all that common. And a lot of guys really take offense to their work being inspected. I mean, I know you've had an issue there and so have I. So
I've had several issues. It's one of the guys that originally kind of was my early mentor in inspecting. He's like, you'll find one. And I think you talked about this. He's like, one thing you'll find about welders is there's a lot of prima donnas there. And sure enough, people, well, on one hand, you get the people that will never admit that their welds are bad. But then on the other hand, you got the people like we talked about last week who are just waiting for you to say, hey, you know, this is what's wrong. What do I need to do to fix it? I don't want to take any responsibility. And I don't care. So, you know, there's, I think at the end of the day, the thing that people are most worried about and the workers is just being done. You know what I mean? It's like, we want to build this. We want to be done with it. We want to, and passing inspection is the final step. We just want to get through it.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the things we kind of talked about was the corruption that goes on or could go on. You know, you hear about stuff and, you know, as inspectors, and I don't really have any good stories, but you know, I've got one where I showed up on a site deep in the heart of Texas. And as an inspector, you can kind of tell just when you pull up to the site, and I was doing structural stuff and you can kind of tell from looking at the crew and kind of how the inspection is going to go. And, you know, from looking at how they got their stuff set up, and it's a good indicator of the kind of work that they're probably going to produce. So I get up there and I just, it's a whole nother thing, but as an inspector, especially with a third party, it's like, there's a point where you just walk up to a job and you take a quick glance at it and you're like, nope, you're not ready. Like, but you still have to tell them exactly what they did wrong or else they're gonna be like, well, we don't know what's wrong with it. Like, well, it's the whole thing, you know? Anyway. So I get up there and I'm up in this lift and you know, this, I'm just looking at this stuff, shaking my head. Obviously my paint marker is about to run out of paint and you know, it's just the whole thing looks like a kid's like cloth at a restaurant or something, you know, the crayon that you draw on like that Italian garden or whatever. And just stuff everywhere. At that point I'm like, why don't I just mark what's good?
I know. Look, I told you I was for a brief period of time was over the inspection bay, and this was a couple of ownerships ago with the company that I was at. So absolute no reflection on any of the folks that are currently there at all.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I was over the inspection bay for a little while, and not that it's an ideal process, but it's what we were doing at the time. And look, I just come out of being in a help desk and trying to get into quality and all this type of stuff. So I didn't know any better at the time. So we're doing crack mapping for NDT, which I know, just take a damn picture of it. That's just better than any crack mapping you can do. But, you know, I was really proud of, man, developed a really cool little app to where they could map it right onto the drawing. And so I'd been there witnessing all of the inspectors do the crack mapping because I wanted to make sure my app was working for it. And then I go back to check the records later and like half the crap they had mapped is erased and gone. And I'm like, I know I saw it. And so here I am thinking that like something with my software was wrong. No. The one of the engineers decided he didn't like those cracks being mapped, so he just erased them. He didn't want that to get over to the customer. And I'm like, no, no.
Yeah, that's.
He's like, well, we'll still fix it. We just didn't want them to like. No,
no, that's not how that works. It's got it like, especially with crack. Yeah, I mean that's a whole thing.
Look, and there's no paperwork to go along with this story. Because I just I was going along on a job. I was kind of shadowing someone a little bit. I was looking to try to get into weld inspection. So this was like my first job. This 2017 business was rough. You know, this is like a year into starting doing Texas Quality Assurance full time. I guess we started it in 2013. And look, I got to put food on the table. So let's go do weld inspections or pipeline inspections. And so I went out with a guy and like, we are way past the last cell phone tower. Just one of these, you know, digs. And so I'm going to check the guy's work like I was supposed to. And he just kind of taps on the gun. And he's like, oh, I got my inspection right here. And it's like, cool. I'm just going to go home. This is God's way of saying, Kyle, don't get into this world. But people are crazy.
The pipeline. Yeah. That's one thing I never did is pipeline. And, you know, you hear stories about that. But yeah, that's a whole different life.
And that's no even reflection on the pipeline stuff. Like I've known guys with just as bad of an attitude in the shop. They just didn't have the opportunity to carry a gun with them. And I'm not going to argue with no one having a gun out there. Cause there, God only knows how many freaking snakes and critters going to bite you and get you. I guarantee I'd have a gun out there myself too. Cause I ain't have no rattlesnake pick up on me.
Yeah. That's crazy. So you're like, all right, inspection's over.
I was like, all right, cool. That's good. I'm not turning in a time slip for the day. I'm not billing nothing. I'm just going to get my ass home. I'm done. Not the world I want to be in.
Wasn't even here. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So where I was going to say is the guy tried to slip me $20 for a breakfast sandwich. He didn't have a gun, but, He saw my paint marker was out and ready, and he's like, well, how about you came a long way today, didn't you? And I was like, yeah, it's pretty, you know, 3-hour drive. And he's like, well, how about just to show my gratitude, I give you this money to go get yourself, you know, breakfast sandwich or something. So he slips $20 in my pocket, and I knew immediately. I was like, this guy's trying to bribe me. And I was like, I wouldn't consider it ever. But especially after I've already marked up the whole thing and it's this bad, you know, this isn't like, oh yeah, my guys didn't clean up a little bit of slag there. Can we just move along with, no, this was like that whole structure or, you know, that whole area needed to be refabricated essentially, eventually, but like, and in fact, they got rid of that crew, but I was like, I don't even know what to do. I text my boss. I was like, look, I'm pretty sure I just got bribed. This guy just gave me money. He didn't say it was specifically for, and you know, to be easy on him, but I don't know, you know, I've never been given money before for just existing, you know, on a weld inspection. But so my boss will like, well, you got to tell the superintendent, you got to, you know, you can't take it. So I go into the office and I'm like, and again, this is somebody that the contractor hired, so he didn't even hardly know this guy. And I'm like, your guy, may have dropped $20 from his wallet into my pocket somehow. Don't know. And he was like a little confused. I didn't want to pay your guy. Just try to bribe me. You know, like I was too nice probably in the situation. He's like, well, what do you mean? I'm like, he handed me $20 whenever I started paying.
It's like, no one wants, I mean, not no one. Most good people don't even want to get someone that's doing wrong in trouble. We just want the problem resolved.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, I'm not. Yeah. And especially when you're on the road and remote, you know, crews are hard to find. Like, it's hard to get somebody out there. It's hard to get somebody out there the same day, you know? So it's like,
look, most folks probably don't know what this life is like. And thankfully, I've never had to like live it, but I've gone out and done plenty of audits and inspections on them. And life for these guys is like, you live in a hotel for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. You get your butt up at 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning, sometimes even earlier, because it might still be an hour and a half drive from the nearest hotel to wherever it is you're going, whether it's a pipeline or installing wind turbines or God only knows what else.
Yeah.
And then they go work for 10, 12 hours and then come back. And then, I mean, it's not a real fun life.
No. And there's not people beating down the door to do it. You know, if you let somebody go, it's not like, oh, well, I'm going to go up to the, I'm just going to put out a resume finder here and we should have somebody, or who's next in the applications. Nope. There's no. You know.
And then, I mean, look, you got a lot of guys that have no, they're away from their wife for weeks at a time. There's nothing fun to do.
Yeah.
You get tired of drinking after a while. And if you don't, you kind of ruin your life.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's just not much to do. So there's some tension sometimes. I mean, oh, you get 20, 30 guys in closed quarters working together day in, day out. It's a little rough.
Especially if you have an inspector or, you know, somebody in that kind of relationship, and, you know, you build relationships with these guys, and you don't want to get them in trouble, and they don't want to get, but, you know, it's like, that's, I remember having that conversation multiple times. Is like, you just get done checking something. It's bad. You feel bad because, like, I really don't want to get you in trouble, or I don't want to, you know, but this is my job. You know, this is, you have your job of this and I have my job. So,
well, this is, again, I don't know how many times I can preach it. And I swear folks probably think I just come up with excuses to say this, but like, this is why you have to create a culture where nonconformance reporting is not a negative reflection on the operator.
Yeah. Yeah. It just needs to be an everyday thing.
It can't be. Now, if you find a trend of nonconformities over time, fine. That might could be a reflection on the operator. But any individual incident is simply an individual nonconformity. Thank you. Move on. But it's hard to create that culture. It's really, really hard to create that culture.
Yep.
But you talk about your role of an inspector. So in I actually forget which one of Deming's books this was from. I was reading through here a while back. And one of the things Deming talked about was with inspection, you know, he's like, so if you're the inspector, and he made the same point, you got a relationship with these guys. Like, you might be inspecting his parts today, but you were at a barbecue or at his, you know, kid's wedding last weekend or whatever it was, right? Like, y'all have a life. And so let's say that there's a certain, you know, tolerance, and the tolerance is, you know, we'll just use stupid numbers here. Tolerance is a half inch, right? Just make it simple. All right. And he was, instead of a half inch off, he was like, I don't know, 9/16 off.
Yeah.
I mean, doing that market is real close. I don't know how big of a deal it is. I don't want to get him in trouble. Man, it's the end of the day on Friday. Man, I don't want to deal with this.
Yeah.
It's a slippery slope. I'm not saying that's right.
But or it could be the final inspection before the thing ships on time and you're about to, or, you know, the truck's waiting on you or the paint shop's waiting on you. And if you count this off, you're going to have to delay the project for another week. I mean, there's times like that.
Yeah. Well, and that happens, like, folks, again, they don't even realize this. So there was a client we worked with here a few years ago, and I was impressed by this because the CEO of the company got out there and helped out with a few things. And it's a big shop, probably 200 or 300 employees. And so they had to ship so much product by the end of the month. And so, like, once midnight on the 31st hit, if it is not on that truck, you ain't getting paid for it this month.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the last day of the month is like all hands on deck. And again, I was impressed. Here's the CEO getting out there and helping to load the product himself to make sure it gets on the truck, gets out the door before the end of the month. But again, that's a great opportunity to, I didn't see that inspection report. Load it.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that happened here. I didn't see that occur, but it's easy. And I just have to. So what are your thoughts about, like, these type behaviors? Do you think that's what may have influenced Boeing here? Or do you think it might be, I don't know, what's your opinion?
It's a massive
telling anyone what did or didn't happen.
Yeah. I mean, it's a massive entity. There's government funds involved. There's, you know, massive contracts we can't even imagine involved. There's tens of thousands of people. But I think one of the things that I have heard consistently from these people and the people that talk about it is the culture, which we talk about a lot. You know, it's like, I don't know, you know, take that video, for example. If what that guy was saying was true and they found, 200 issues the first time, well, then an actual manager comes in, you know, that's somebody from above who represents or who had potentially a hand in building the culture or the mission statement. They're going in now, and then they're coming back with less, and then they're getting accolades for it. What is that saying to everybody else?
Yeah.
You need to find less stuff wrong is what that says, or you need to not look so hard.
That's a whole other podcast topic we could go on is like, sometimes your company rules are never written down.
Yeah.
The real rules are never written down.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure it's been mentioned here is like, every company has a culture. You just may not know what it is, or it may not be written down.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So little inside stuff here. Like, my son flies a lot. And so this kind of hits home, you know, because I'm like looking at these planes, and apparently now, if you use sites like Kayak or, you know, something like that, you can actually filter based off of the plane type.
Really?
So, yeah. That's so people cool. are saying, oh, well, I'm just not going to take flights that have these specific types of plane. Well, flights are already kind of hard to find. I mean, especially, yeah. you know, they're already expensive. But another thing people don't realize that I read, and I think this is true, is an airline reserves the right to change the equipment that they said they were going to use up to 24 hours in advance, or like right at the yeah. last second, essentially. They could be like, oh yeah, well, we're going to use this plane, even though they planned to use that plane all along, but just weren't saying they were. Like, they reserved the right to use whatever equipment they want. So just because you selected, I don't want this plane, doesn't necessarily mean you're not going to get that plane.
But even then, that's just based off of the little bit of information that's seeping up to the public knowledge.
Yeah.
Like, I was just reading, you know, yesterday about, guess what? Another plane had a wheel fall off in flight.
Yep. There was just a fire, I think, last night, you know, with one of these Boeing, like, and there's video of that one. I think it took off, and it's literally pouring on Boeing, you know, and they say it rains, it pours. Like, it's pouring on Boeing right now. I haven't looked at how their stock's doing or anything like that. But
manufacturer, I think I would be right now having my team do enormous mass quantities of inspections and fix this crap right now so that we don't show up on the news like Boeing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's, I mean, so, you know, it's already become an issue before, and the government is, you know, supposed to have this special, they're supposed to be proving the special inspections that they're doing, and, you know, they're changing all this stuff. I think they're on like their fourth strike or something, you know, like the three strike, there's like the fifth strike. And yeah, now they got these special remedial inspection things that the government, you know, people are, lawmakers and stuff are trying to say they're doing stuff. So they go
stupid band-aids.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's all it is, but I don't know, you know, it's, parts are falling out of the sky. Planes are having to do emergency landings. You know, luckily there's a lot of redundancy in a lot of these planes. So even if, you know, an engine fails, you're still going to make it back to an airport or to somewhere. So, you know.
Now that's a very good point there too, because like the safety margins on plane, oh gosh, I used to know these numbers. I don't remember it no more, but it's really insane, the safety factor that they build into this stuff. And it's for this reason that, let's say stuff does go wrong and does screw up, that's not the single point of failure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, maybe for the guy that had his shirt ripped off.
I think normally, you know, barring some structural failure where a wing comes off or something like that, normally when a plane crashes and it's catastrophic, it's the pilot, you know, did something wrong, or, you know, they call it controlled fit into terrain or controlled flight into terrain, where basically the pilot flies it's a whole thing.
Interesting term.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, there's several instances where there's fog and stuff and a pilot gets discombobulated, there's the one where, I think it was in Louisiana where the pilot pulled back too hard or something like that, stalled the plane, couldn't control it. Yeah. It was the pilot's fault. So that's, you know, when there's big, but let's say you have an engine failure, let's say you have an electrical issue or even a small fire, you can get the plane landed, you know, the plane's still flyable. It's, you know, so there's a lot of redundancy there, but, I'm very curious to see where this all goes. I mean, and who's responsible for seeing who it goes. I mean, that's another thing, you know, is this like I don't know. That's probably a whole nother podcast. Like whose responsibility is it to step in and be like, okay, you guys are done. Or does anybody have that authority, or, you know, like,
well, that's a great question though, with any instance of corrective action, which this is just massive corrective action, several corrective actions here. We did an audit of our audits here a while back, and 80% of our internal audits, the first time we audited a company, was evaluation of effectiveness was a finding. It's almost always a finding for evaluation of effectiveness, even mature management systems. It happens so frequently.
Yeah.
And people wait until after the issue is fixed to then determine how it was, if it was fixed well. And it's like, that might be a little bit late. Like I tell folks all the time, when they do corrective actions, one of the first things you have to do is, about the same stage that you're identifying that root cause, you need to go in and say, here is how, after whatever plan we come up with, this is how I intend to verify that root cause has been mitigated.
Yeah.
And now, that doesn't mean you can't change that plan after the fact, document it. Why'd you do it? What'd you do? But define how you're going to check it ahead of time. And I think about this, like with, I mean, anything from Congress and government and all these things as well, like any program or any program, any company puts in place, like, man, we're going to do this, it's going to be great, except nothing ever goes to plan. So just accept it won't go to plan. And how are you going to check it at the end? And instead, what people do is these Band-Aid solutions. Oh, well, that didn't work, so we're going to do this to make sure it doesn't work. But then how do you know that the this thing you did was actually helpful?
Yeah.
It's just this never-ending cycle of bullcrap Band-Aids, and no one wants to fix problems.
Yeah.
Well, they want to appear to fix problems.
Yeah. Well, and some people are professional problem solvers, so there's always got to be a problem.
This is very true.
Yeah.
This is very true.
I the FAA has definitely got a big hand in it. You know, they're the authority with anything carrier, like transporting carrier related, or, you know, just anything with that involves money in flight. So, you know, it may be a thing where the FAA just says, hey, probably not every model, but, you know, these specific departments, they're not considered airworthy anymore.
Yeah.
You know, their airworthiness certificates are revoked or whatever it is. So, yeah, I mean, there's certain things, but then again, billions of dollars are at stake here, tens of thousands of jobs. So that's a very tough situation. So
it is. And I can't say I know any good solution for it, but
it's
tough. Cause again, like, I know the pressure I've had before with things, like even with just putting out an update to a certain, like just rolling out new server updates.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you get pressure from management. No, let's just go ahead and get it done. When you get it done, better do it now than do it later. I'm like, that's a stupid saying.
Yeah.
Well, it's better to get it done right than get it done now.
One thing I always heard in inspection was nothing happens until something happens. You know, it may not make sense, but it's like you may be doing something for 10 years a certain way, and then something happens, and then everything just comes tumbling down.
I had a client here a few years ago that, you know, we just kept harping on them about how they manage their supplier approvals. And like, guys, you have to reevaluate your suppliers.
Yep.
Oh, no, we're good. We're good how we're doing it. Like, you can say that. Well, the auditor ain't never found nothing. That's a bad model.
Well, the inspector didn't find it. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay, cool. So you putting all your faith in that inspector.
Yeah.
Smart. Oh, what about when he finds something you don't like? Oh, we're going to tell him we didn't find it. Ah, I see the game we're playing.
Yeah. A vicious, circle cycle? There.
Yeah. So, no, it's a shame this stuff happens. And, you know, people like to look at it and make it, I mean, I'm not saying it's not a big deal, but they try to make it as so, unfortunately, a unique occurrence.
Yeah.
But I don't find this stuff terribly unique. I think it's, again, the accident investigation I talk about, where it's like there were 11 things that all came together at the same time.
Yeah.
Any one of those gone and nothing bad would have happened. They may still be operating today in the same dumb manner. Doesn't mean all those 11 things were right.
Yeah. I mean, what was the pipe or the platform they made that movie about? That exploded in the Gulf for a long time, you know, spewing oil in the Gulf for.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that was you hear there, that kind of set like a pre and post time frame. You know, I forgot what that pipe, that platform was called.
Deepwater Horizons. That we.
So you hear about like a lot of times a platform like pre Deepwater Horizon and post, you know, because at that time, that's when something happened. And now we got to go reevaluate mm-hmm. how we do everything. And, you know, because mm-hmm. of that instance that was sitting below the surface forever, that finally mm-hmm. happened.
Well, and folks don't realize how often, like, an individual issue, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, I'm not saying it's wrong, but it's not in itself a terrible issue.
Yeah.
But these things combine together and you get weird synergies you never expected before. I mean,
or you couldn't expect. Yeah.
Yeah. You couldn't predict, because, like, well, that event never happened and this couldn't cause that event and this couldn't cause that event. But these two weird ass things that happen to happen at the same time.
Yeah. Nobody could have thought of that. Yeah.
No. And unfortunately, sometimes that is the case. I guess that's where, you know, this is why I talk about risk management is really great in the design process.
Yeah.
Right. But on our everyday functioning in the management system, maybe that's a little bit different. But, you know, I guess that's a whole other crazy rabbit trail. Yeah. Man, we got a lot of rabbit trails on this episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
We could talk about like 10 different things on it. We probably need
more. Plenty of quality matters to come.
Oh my gosh. And well, okay. So I guess I'll kind of finish with this thought. You finish whatever you got is. None of these are overly technical. Like none of these are like really freakishly complex problems that take some PhD with a 180 IQ to solve. This doesn't take the crack shop team of experts. Like a lot of these things are just basic cultural stuff. These are just basic human behaviors that we've got to recognize. But I don't think people like to say we have to mitigate people's egos.
Yeah.
We have to mitigate, you know, these type of things. But
work ethic or
yeah. 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 Oh yeah. Let's do a risk assessment of work ethic. Let's put that on there. I think 10 years ago that might have flown. 20 years ago, definitely. Today, I think that might get you in trouble, but it yeah. is like yeah, work ethic. That's a pretty damn big risk.
Yeah. So-and-so just doesn't care, but we can't find anybody to replace them.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yes. All right. So I'll get off my soapbox, I hope. What you got before we finish up?
No, I mean, that's it. You know, like what you said was, it's a bunch of little problems that are simple that come together. And, you know, when you're looking at it from the top down view at 30, then you're like, holy, that's super complex. But it all started with somebody that just didn't care that day or was mm-hmm. busy that, you know, so
yep.
just make sure your systems have redundancies and make sure that, you know, one little mistake's not going to bring down your whole company.
That's a pretty darn good spot to finish it. So I'll close it up there. Man, this is a good topic. I appreciate you bringing it up. And, you know, hopefully we don't wind up any body counts. So if either one of us committed suicide, we didn't.
I'm happy.
Yeah.
I love my life.
That's good.
No, we do.
I got a stupid horse I got to take care of. Now, yeah. Now something happens to that horse, I might be responsible. Nah, he's a good guy. He just pisses me off a whole lot. Oh, stupid guy. Stupid horse. In any case, we'll finish it up there and y'all have a great day. So if you ain't already, like, subscribe. If you're listening to this on like iTunes, Spotify, wherever, we're on Audible these days too. So if you got Audible, Lord knows I'm an Audible fan. I think I got like 200 something books on it right now. Check us out. Subscribe. Be sure to check out the YouTube channel, because then you get to see the goofy pictures of my stupid horse and all the dumb stuff he does there, too. So y'all have a great day, and we will see you soon. Oh, whoops, I should have hit the end recording button. Whoop.